Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
You're listening to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
This week, we're speaking with Bella Mackey about running and mental health.
I think people with mental health stuff get really good at keeping it a secret. With running, because I'm obviously a huge evangelical about it, but I have to always do the caveat of do not just try running. What running gives me, which I assume even at the beginning is something that I understood it might be able to offer, was basically the chance to get away, like run away.
Yeah, very excited to have Bella on the podcast. I think one of the nicest parts of working for Runner's World is that we get loads and loads of stories about how running's improved people's mental health. And so it feels like a really great subject to discuss just before Christmas as well, which I think it can be a challenging time for a lot of people.
I think that's important to note. I was reading the other day about, you know, all the festive period and how it gets sort of extra egged on to be like this
for
big
sure.
family time of year and stuff. And it's you know, that's very true for a large number of people, but it's also important to note that it's not necessarily the nicest time for a lot of people.
Definitely, yeah. I think it shines a spotlight on your own particular situation.
Yeah, very much so.
And if that's a great situation, then it's probably the most amazing time of the year. But if it's not, then it kind of intensifies those feelings.
Yeah. So it's nice to sort of have a conversation about that and allow people to maybe, or certainly encourage people to reach out to others and extend that festive spirit to try and sort of make it a bit more of a nice time for everyone.
Agreed. Let me quickly bore you with my mile training.
Okay, fine.
So I've been cracking on with this. I have to say, the Christmas period is not the ideal time to go into an intense training schedule.
What do you mean? All the delicious, you know, highly nutritious...
Yeah, there's a lot of temptations, aren't there? But yeah. I've stuck to it fairly well, actually. So this week's session is... it's weird, actually. It's 1x400 metres.
Okay.
This is all at a kind of 5-minute mile pace.
Right.
1x400 metres, 30 seconds rest, mm-hmm. 1x900 metres,
whoever runs that distance.
Yeah, whoever runs that, 60 seconds rest, okay. And then 1x300 metres.
Okay.
That's it.
That's your one session?
That's it. So it's super intense, but it's over very quickly. So this is the beauty of the mile training, Ben, is that it's hard, but that's 15 minutes
but
of work.
But honestly, that first 400 will feel very easy, and then I reckon 600 into that next rep.
Oh,
that's awful.
It's going to be bad, that, yeah.
Yeah. Because that's... Yeah, I mean, you're working by that point. And then that final one.
That final 300 metres is going to be bad, but then it's only 300 metres.
But that's it, but then you're done.
Then I'm done, exactly. And then I'm back office partying, mince pie eating, etc.
Good.
All good. So shall we welcome our guest of the week?
Let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio, guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone, could be an athlete.
When Bella Mackey's marriage broke up, her mental health hit rock bottom. She started running to ease her anxiety and wrote a book about the experience. Jog On was published in 2018 and became an instant bestseller, inspiring people to take to the road and run to better mental health. Bella, welcome to the Runner's World podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
I wanted to start at the beginning. Obviously, your book Jog On talks about running and mental health. But when do you think you first started struggling with your mental health?
Early memory, like 5,
right.
6.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. I think for lots of people it is a kind of childhood thing. I mean, obviously it can manifest at any age, but I think it's quite common with things like anxiety and OCD to present in childhood. So yeah, definitely I remember having those feelings when I was a kid, but obviously not knowing what it was.
It's easier looking back to see that it was progressively building.
Yeah, it's funny when you tie up the pieces of the puzzle and you go, oh, that's what that was. You know, it wasn't that I couldn't breathe. You know, it wasn't that I was, you know, my mum used to call me like an anxious child, right. You know, or like a warrior.
Yeah.
And then you realise, oh no, that was all gearing up. Like that's part of my, you know, my makeup is that I'm just a really anxious person. And I think quite a lot of people say to me when they get diagnosed with some, you know, whatever it is, anxiety, depression, etc., that they have this enormous sense of relief because at least they know what it is. And it's not just this kind of thing that they've had in their mind for 10, 15 years. And they know that it's a kind of actual thing. So I think probably I felt a bit like that.
I wonder if parents struggle to diagnose or maybe reluctant to diagnose kids with mental health problems because it feels like wrongly that it might be you may have done something as a parent.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's super hard work to know. As well, like you just, if your kid's anxious, you just think, oh,
yeah, and kids aren't good at articulating what that is, so it's quite hard to pick up on, I think, if you're a parent. And my mum, the thing is, I'm old, so you know, my mum, this we're talking about the 80s, so it's not, there were no, you know, I don't think that it wasn't like child psychology was so developed that they would have kind of been trained to spot that. Do you know what I mean? I think now I get lots of parents being in touch with me saying, oh, my kid's already been assessed, and you know, so they're much more on it, I think, parents and teachers, whereas I don't think the conversation was developed enough back then for my mum. So I don't blame my mum. My mum blames herself sometimes, but I don't think it was anything to do with them. They did the best they could, basically.
Did you try to cover any of this stuff up? Were you aware that maybe some of this behaviour didn't feel right and you were kind of ashamed of any of it?
Oh yeah, I think people with mental health stuff, you know, anything, get really good at keeping it a secret.
Yeah.
And so yeah, definitely as a kid I had lots of weird behaviours. You know, there's kind of the typical OCD stuff, you know, like turning light switches on and off and all that stuff.
Yeah, I was big on that actually.
Yeah. So all of those little things that you do as a kid that you think are kind of quirks and you definitely don't tell anyone, because how would you explain to someone like, Mum, I do this because I think, you know, if I don't you might die. You know, it's quite an odd thing to... So, and then into your adulthood, you know, I just got more and more adept at making excuses for things. So it was like, you know, I wouldn't fly for a long time. And that was me saying, oh, you know, I don't enjoy holidays. You know, you sort of come up with these ridiculous things, and I don't take the tube because, you know, it's gross and sweaty, which to be fair, it is. But, you know, so I would just cover for myself rather than say, you know, and in which case I just made myself look weirder. Because if I just said, do you know what, this makes me scared, I can't do it. I sort of think that would have been more normal than me coming up with these kind of increasingly complex and ridiculous excuses for things.
And in Jog On, your book, you reference your first marriage and the breakup of that. Was that sort of like a turning point? Was that an accumulation of these sort of like story, like these coverings of your symptoms? Or
it's a really good question. I think getting to a point where I could get married felt like a really big thing for me, because I thought that means I'm normal.
Right.
You know, like I'm normal. I'm hitting all the life goals that you're supposed to be hitting as an, you know, in your late 20s. And so I thought, okay, great. You know, that means I can keep it together. And then on the flip side of that, I was actually sort of disintegrating. Not disintegrate, that's dramatic. But, you know, I was kind of more anxious than I ever had been. And so there's two things at the same time, obviously amounted to like this sort of dreadful failure in the end. And then that was a huge relief because I just thought, okay, right, well, I've tanked everything. I can start again. So it was really great. It was brilliant. Right. It was the best thing, you know, that ever happened to me, really. But how cliched is that?
How bad did your anxiety become, Bella?
I guess, I don't know, it depends on how you look at it. For me, the worst thing was that I had like horrendously intrusive thoughts, kind of, and they would come in periods and waves where I would have them for months and I would be so inconsolable that I'd just sit there crying all day long, arguing with these thoughts constantly, you know, getting into this kind of mad, not, you know, I wouldn't say delusional because I knew what was right and what was not real, but, you know, you feel completely kind of off your rocker. So for me, that was the worst bit. But I think if you ask someone around me, they'd say, but you couldn't go to the end of the road without someone else. Or, you know, you were unable, everything was dangerous to me. So, you know, like everything was unsafe and I couldn't do anything without someone else. And so that was like a really infantilizing thing that I think from the outside was quite dramatic. But for me, it was definitely, you know, constant crappy thoughts going on and on and on.
So there's a sense that your world was kind of getting smaller.
Tiny, tiny. I remember taking my mobile to the recycling bank at the bottom of my road and my ex-husband saying, what are you doing? You don't need to take your phone. And I was like, I do, because I might have a panic attack. So it was really like, you know, 30 steps away and my world was that tiny.
Before you found the running, did you follow the route of prescribed medicines and all those sorts of things to try and counter it?
Yeah, throughout my 20s, because I was really lucky and I'm still really lucky in that I have a kind of middle class family who were able to, you know, financially support me and find out different paths for me. Because, you know, when I went to my local GP, who obviously is lovely. But, you know, he said, you know, prescribed me some very, very, very old-fashioned, sort of slightly sedative medicine and said, there's a wait list of 18 months for therapy. And I just thought, I will not last that long. So my parents took me to, you know, got me a nice therapist, and I started taking antidepressants prescribed that were kind of a bit more up to date and not sedatives. So I'd done lots of things, you know, and I think, especially, you know, with mental health stuff, you quite often fall down other routes. So, you know, you try kind of like calming teas and, you know, hypnotherapy music and whatever, you know, so you sort of try everything. And meds definitely helped me. I'm a huge proponent of meds for mental health. And therapy, and then later on I found a very good therapist, but that sort of came at the same time as running. So those were my two kind of kryptonite things.
Yeah.
But I had tried lots of other things. And I think with running, because I'm obviously a huge evangelical about it, but I have to always do the caveat of do not just try running, like go to the doctor. You know, there are steps first. You know, I'm a big fan of experts. I don't think you should just try, you know, running to see if that will help on its own.
Yeah. I think the idea that running is a kind of silver bullet that's going to cure everything.
Yeah. I'm not Gwyneth Paltrow. Like, I don't want to sell you snake oil. Do you know what I mean? Like, I would like you to also try a lot of other things too.
Yeah. I think that's a sensible approach. Do you remember your first run? I'm interested in what that would have been, what that would have been like for you. Were you kind of nervous about running when it started off?
Yeah, I don't really, people ask me why I decided to go for a run, and I don't remember, because I was in a funk. And I remember the actual run, but I don't remember whether I felt nervous or what I felt, except that I know I was definitely embarrassed because I did it at night, and I did it in an alleyway that was, you know, there was one cat there. And I just kept going back there again and again at the beginning because I was too embarrassed. I think lots of people, when they go running for the first time, think people are going to point and laugh and stop and just scream their heads off at how stupid I look. And then you really quickly realise that it's a load of balls and that, you know, no one is looking at you. Everyone is on their phone. No one cares. So for the first time, I was definitely embarrassed. And I think I did 3 minutes and then I stopped.
Yeah.
What was it that you thought, what was it that made you go back then?
Yeah, again, it's one of those things where I sort of don't know why I went back. I think it's because for those 3 minutes, I felt a bit less teary and, you know, a bit less focused on what was going on inside my brain. And I think that what running gives me, which I assume even at the beginning is something that I understood it might be able to offer, was basically the chance to get away, like run away. You know, I always say running is like a chance to run away, but you get to come home afterwards. Mm-hmm. So I think it sort of broke me out of my brain a bit, even for 3 minutes. And I thought, oh, I'll just try again. And also I think, you know, the other shallow motive, which, you know, if you're being honest, is I remember just thinking, well, screw you, you know, to my ex-husband, I'm going to be fit and hot and healthy and amazing, you know. And so there was probably both those elements to it, you know. But I kept going, which is very strange for me because I'm a huge quitter. I love quitting things. So, yeah, it's very weird.
I think that when we've discussed this previously with other guests and about mental health and the fact that the running bit, obviously you get the chemical kick of, like, your endorphins and that sort of the brain balance and all this. But I think the control was always a huge thing that people who were struggling with all sorts of external forces suddenly found that they were able to just do one thing that was theirs. And I think that's where the running kind of, like, separate from everything else. Like, I can control when I go and how far I'm going to go.
Yeah, and I think also you incrementally improve, you know, every run you do, which is different from, you know, learning a hobby like painting or something where you can't quite judge, you know, whether you're getting better at something or not. Yeah. And with running, especially if you do something like Couch 5K, you're sort of hitting these goals and feeling really proud of yourself. And I think the other thing, and I always say it's kind of maybe especially for women, but obviously for everyone, is that it gives you this incredible sense of independence that, for me, as someone with, like, agoraphobia, I found just the most mesmerizing, intoxicating thing in the whole world.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's a great quote in, have you read Haruki Murakami's
Yes,
book?
Of course I have.
And he says, one of the key questions people tell you or ask you when you're running is, what do you think about when I run? And he said, well, actually, I run to create a void. I run to not think about things. And you sound like someone who overthinks things. Like I think a lot of people with anxiety have that common trait. Is that a sentiment that you would sympathise with? I run to create a void.
Absolutely, because there is something about, there's so many things about running that I bang on about, but one of them, I think, is when I was writing the book, I read a lot about dualism. So the idea, you know, the mind and the body being connected, and in the modern world that we've separated the two things out quite a lot. So, you know, we see our minds as the kind of primary thing to be prized and our bodies as kind of vessels that carry along our minds. And we forget, you know, how much the brain has an impact on the body and vice versa. And, you know, things like we get surprised when if we have flu, we feel sad. You know, of course, those things are incredibly connected, or that I get psoriasis when I'm stressed out. And I always forget. I think, why have I got psoriasis all over me? So that disconnect is really interesting to me. So with running, yeah, it was basically to get my mind out of the driving seat. So almost like my body was in control. My brain was almost coming along for the ride, if you see what I mean. So it was a really nice way of switching the priority and just going, actually, no, you know, you can come along, but you have to be quiet for a bit.
Yeah, and do something physical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I have to concentrate on not falling over, you know, keeping my arms up, not, you know, wheezing, you know, all of those things. It's an obstacle course and your brain is not. So it's a bit like mindfulness or meditation. You know, the thoughts come in, but they also float out. You don't have time or energy to grab onto them and kind of go, what does that mean? What does that, you know?
Yeah.
Because they've gone, you know, because then you're around a corner and they've gone.
What was it that had you run previously when you were younger? Was
no.
it something? It was just literally the one thing that you could do immediately.
I was the most unfit person you've ever met in your life. I thought people that exercised were a bit odd. I spent my gym lessons at school smoking cigarettes in the local park. I it was just one of those, especially again for girls. I think, you know, at school fitness is not taught as a kind of lifestyle thing. It's like, this is an hour to be endured playing netball or whatever it is. You know, none of you are going to do this professionally. Just endure it. And I was always really bad at it. So once I finished school, I was like, I never have to do that again. Great, good, done. So I didn't do any kind of physical exertion. I mean, genuinely, honestly, at all. I mean, I think I had a gym induction once, then I went and got fish and chips. So it really was the first foray I'd had into kind of really getting into something physical.
Yeah.
Very strange, age 30. It's like a midlife crisis, but hopefully a bit.
I think a lot of runners who become very keen on it weren't sporty and come to it quite late.
Yeah. There's actually a study done recently, which we're going to talk about later, which is that there's an age of 41 was touted as the sort of cut-off point for people to...
Oh, I saw that. And then The Guardian did a big piece saying, this is not true. You know, you should carry on. You can start at any age.
100%.
Yeah.
We've got loads of masters, like runners now, who are, you know, world record holders who started running in their, like, 50s and 60s.
Because... Yeah, I met a woman the other day in her 60s who's running, like, ultra marathons and had only started 6 years ago.
Yeah.
It's very dispiriting to see stuff like that.
Yeah, massively.
Yeah.
You say that you've become kind of evangelical about running. Is that to the extent where, you know, if you know that somebody's struggling or you've got a friend and you propose running as a solution?
No, because I'm not insufferable. Well, I hope I'm not. I'm sure some people would disagree, but no. So with my friends and family, I have tried a little bit with some of them to try and get them into running. But if someone had done that to me, I'd have been like, oh, go away. Like, this is ridiculous. You know, you don't know me. You don't know my problems. You know, this is not going to help me. So I don't evangelize running to people that I love because they know how much I love it and they know how much it's helped me. So if they wanted to do it, they would have done it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
My husband runs a lot. My sister runs, you know, so I have, there are people around me that sort of have taken it on board. But when people get in touch with me, which happens a lot online, and say, you know, I'm feeling like this, I'm feeling like that, and then I'll try and help them, you know, and running is always something I would suggest. Or walking. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't have to be running. That's the thing.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
I know we're here talking about running, but it really is any activity, physical activity. And for me, that's running. But for someone else, that might be swimming. And I'm just as happy when someone says to me, I'm not a runner, but I love, you know, I love swimming five times a week or whatever. And that's fantastic. I think it's really boring, but, you know, that's fine. It's more about, yeah, using your body and sort of and getting something out of that.
I completely agree with you about walking. I think that's, we think that running is very accessible, and I think that's true. But walking is the ultimately accessible thing, isn't it?
It's great.
Almost anyone can go out for and walk for 10 minutes.
Yeah, if you're lucky enough to be able-bodied and, you know, and you're feeling sort of stressed out or whatever, the first thing I would suggest is go for a walk. Because actually running, you have to build up, whereas walking, you know, you can just go out for an hour and it doesn't impact your sort of...
Yeah, exactly. And they can be part of the same outing, can't they? You can walk for a minute, run for a minute.
Yeah.
You're into that, aren't you?
Well, at the moment.
Are you doing like speed?
I'm just injured. So I'm just, whatever I can do that sort of resembles running is a tick. Yeah, it's fine. I went for a very hungover walk yesterday and I was like, this is training, this is fine.
Yeah, this is still counts. It still counts.
Yeah, exactly. What does a typical running week look like for you now? If you're sort of, I guess, probably training for something?
No, I never train for anything.
Right.
No. I'm not a race runner. I'm not a personal best person. I'm a really crap runner, and I will probably never do anything, you know, anything worth meriting. But a typical week, because I'm freelance now, so it's great, which means I just get to run for longer every day. So I do about 12 or 13K a day in the mornings, and that sort of sets me up for the rest of the day. And I sort of try and do that regardless of what's going on. I get very crotchety. Not very crotchety, but I do get a bit like, I haven't, you know, where's my run today?
I'm dreadful.
Yeah, yeah.
If I don't go out. I mean, I go on my bike now, but like, I need that, like, I'm fine.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the problem with injury is I get lots of messages from people saying, Bella, I've been injured for a month or 3 months or whatever it is. You know, my mental health has plunged because I'm so ratty and I don't have my outlet. And I think that is a real problem if you rely on one thing like running too much. You know, I think that's why, you know, if you're biking, that's great. If you have like a fallback or something else.
Yeah, yeah, diversify.
Otherwise, yeah, I felt my knee twinging yesterday and I was like almost in paroxysms of panic. Like, oh God, yeah. So yeah, I think every day I run, which, you know, I know lots of people don't, but I think some people say to me, oh, you know, you must be doing a race, and then I feel bad. And then other people say, you do 12K a day, like, how am I supposed to get to that? And I'm almost like, please just find your own sweet spot.
For sure.
You know what I mean? Like, some people are ultramarathon runners and I think they're balmy and also admire it. And some people, you know, run 5K twice a week and that's completely fine too. It has to be kind of the level that you love and the level that motivates you to keep going. Because otherwise, you know, if you're doing too much every day or week or whatever, you're just going to quit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why would you, you know?
And it sucks all the joy out of it.
It does, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Mm.
How would you describe your state of mind now compared to when you started running?
Oh, it's completely different. Like, honestly, within like 2 weeks of running, I realised that if I, you know, I would push my limits. I would think, okay, well, if I've done 5 minutes, I can do one more road that I would normally not go down on my own. And then that would be fine. And then I'd, you know, do another road. And so running, really, honestly, I know it's ridiculous, but it taught me not to be scared of things. Because I was like, oh, okay, well, I'm doing this and it's fine. I don't have time to panic. And then suddenly within kind of a month or whatever, I was running through central London, which I, you know, I hadn't been to central London on my own for 5, 6, I don't know how many years, you know, that long. And every time I did it, it reinforced this thing of like, you're fine, you know, this is good, you're proud of yourself and this feels lovely. So from that, I started doing other things that scared me because I was like, right, well, you know, I have to push myself. So I started doing other things like I did. I mean, I was already flying, I think, by then, but I was doing things like, you know, getting in lifts, which I hadn't done before, and going away on my own, and trampolining. And no, not, it wasn't trampolining. That's not scary. It was trapezing.
Right.
That was scary. So I started doing all of these things, and now that's kind of my motto, is I have to do things if they scare me. And as a result, I haven't had a panic attack in like 6 years. And honestly, I think I'm as close to like, yeah, not.
That's like fantastic,
yeah,
isn't,
yeah,
it? Like, that's amazing. Yeah.
The only hard part of that is, and it's not hard. I mean, it's like, you know, you're on a stable keel or whatever, and you have to remember that, you know, of course you can have dips and, you know, periods, yeah, of anxiety and all that stuff. But the only hard thing is knowing, like, you found this brilliant thing that helps you that much, and now you have to keep going. So even on the days, I think for some people, obviously, if you just think, I can't be asked today, that's fine. I sort of feel like I don't have that option. I feel like I have to keep going. You know, obviously, if I miss a day, it doesn't matter. Yeah. But really, it's like, okay, you have to commit to this now, because it's not, it doesn't, you don't, you can't bank 5 years of it or 6 years of it and then go, yeah, okay, I'm done now.
Yeah, right.
So it is something I sort of now think, I found it and now I have to really work hard to, like, to continue doing it as frequently as possible. And sometimes I don't want to. You know, some runs you just think, I hate this. You know, like today I sort of was like, not enjoying this, just not enjoying this run at all. But you have to just keep going. Yeah. But I mean, that's, it's not the worst hardship in the world, but...
No, there's worse things. Did you make other lifestyle changes, like not drink, not have caffeine, that kind of other stuff that can kind of create or like exasperate anxiety?
No.
Right. So it's just running.
Honestly, I'm such a, you know, I'm an anti-wellness proponent. I'm not interested in, you know, eating, you know, chicken without the skin on, or I mean, I'm a vegetarian, so I wouldn't do that anyway. But, you know, like I eat ice cream every single day after my runs. I drink loads of Diet Coke. I, you know, drink loads of wine. I'm a really unhealthy person.
But who also runs every day.
Who also runs every day. Yeah, so, right. And did you see that other study that said running cuts your risk of...
Yeah, we're all fine.
Yeah. So yeah. I just thought, well, if I'm doing 12K a day, then, you know, what, I'm going to live to like 800 or something?
That's exactly it.
Yeah, science, right?
We all
rule
the world.
Yeah.
It's just all of us running around everywhere.
Being really smug constantly,
Bella, thanks so much for coming on
my
podcast.
It's my absolute pleasure.
No, it was great, really great to speak to you, and we really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Yeah, great to speak to Bella just now.
Yeah, absolutely. But we would we'd like to encourage anyone who identifies with the topics raised in this podcast to reach out for help if they need it. Organisations who can offer support include the Samaritans, which is www.samaritans.org, or Mind, which is www.mind.org.uk. And I think that if anyone relates to Bella's story, to use the opportunity to reach out and try and get some help. I mentioned a poll that had been recently run, and you have more info.
I do. So a recent poll suggested that people think they're too old to start exercising at 41.
Right. No age.
No age, yeah. So we'd like to disabuse people of that notion. It is, of course, never too old to start exercising.
No.
And in fact, another study found that runners who started training after 50, so significantly after 41, obviously, were able to be as fast and as lean as peers who had been running their whole lives. So the study looked at 150 older endurance runners whose average age was 68.
And wow, okay.
Dividing them into early starters and late starters.
Right.
And the results showed that irrespective of whether people started, you know, at 18 or 50, their body fat and muscle tone and actually athletic performance were similar.
Well, that's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. You can be a great runner and start at 50, you know.
Yeah. Oh, well, everyone just ignore 41.
Yeah.
And just get on with it.
Carry on, regardless of age.
Yeah, get started. Let's go.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A big thanks to our guest, Bella Mackie, and to you, of course, for listening.
The Runner's World podcast was recorded at Number 8 Studios in Soho and is available on Acast, iTunes, and all your favourite podcast apps. If you've enjoyed the episode, please give us a review, and we will see you again next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.